with the Leisure Man, the Leisure Man, the Leisure Man, the Leisure Man, the Leisure Man.
Welcome to Leisure Man Midweek Podcast. Paul Pabst, Andrew Perloff, NBC Sports. I'm at the home studio, Perloff. Real nice night here with the kids. Now, post-Super Bowl, soaking up some family time, appearing to be a good dad, all that, you know, BS. Now, you are where right now? Where are you located?
So I am actually at the home office as well, but I am in the kitchen cooking up a storm because I've been away for a week. And I am going away for another week. So in between, I want to be like the best possible dad and husband I could possibly be.
Okay. Now, we are going to get to the football game. Everyone's talking about the football game. We can get to that. But for you bros out there, this is the Leisureman tip of the week. Whether you are married or have a girlfriend or, you know, this works out for just about anybody. But let's say you are a young bro out there or a bro who's married and you want to, you know, do something nice. Buying stuff works. It always works. But let me tell you something. Let's say your wife or girlfriend works for a living and, you know, she comes home after a long day of work. If you happen to be there first, if you can make any type of dinner, it doesn't really even have to be good, Perloff. You know that. You've been there. If you could put together where when she walks in the door, there is a meal hot coming out of the oven or on the plate, plated, as the people say, and a glass of her favorite drink ready to go, you're all set. I don't even think that the food quality matters. Do you back me on this one?
I absolutely back you, except that I don't know. Do you follow your own advice here? Because
yes.
I was talking to you yesterday, and you said that your wife made the chili. And I was shocked. What's up with that?
It was a weird scene the other day. My wife now is, she made chili for Super Bowl Sunday on her own volition. I did not ask her or request it. I was taking a nap, you know, pat me on the back for a hell of a day. But
you said that all this stuff about, like, all this talk about being a good husband, and you're saying taking a nap while your wife is cooking chili, and you are an award-winning chili cook?
Do as I say, not as I do, Perloff. Isn't that what the old saying? You know, so, yeah, I'm just, you know, that's the tip for the bros. If you could do that once in a while, more than once in a while, you're all set. If the food happens to be good, you're really set. But do you have any moves like that? What's your favorite move?
Well, actually, I do all the cooking in the house, believe it or not.
Wow.
I don't trust my wife's cooking. She can't say that. I prefer to cook on my own.
Uh-huh.
So that, actually, it's a battle. That's one thing I do. Now, the biggest fight is doing laundry, folding clothes, and putting away clothes. It seems with a family of four that we have more clothes going in and out of the laundry than like an army barrack. So that is where you really gain points in my household.
Nice, nice. Those are good points. All right, let's get to it, man.
Yeah,
I want to get right.
Sexy home talk right there. We really forget the Super Bowl. This is where it's at, buddy.
Yeah, you know, the bros out there, you're going to learn more from the past 2 minutes than the next 30, I guarantee you. All right, let's get to the Super Bowl. I think we all agreed that it was a little, you know, non-threatening those first three quarters. Not a lot of points, not a lot of incidents. I mean, even if there's not a lot of points, you could have like strip sacks and picks and all that kind of good stuff, but just. It was bland for the first three quarters. The game was saved, obviously, because it was tight for the fourth quarter, which is what you always want. But again, when you finish a game, you're like, I compared it on the DP show to seeing your favorite band in concert. And for the first hour and a half, they play all the new stuff, and then they get to their hits. And you're like, all right, and the whole place comes alive when they play their hits. They never played the hits on the fourth quarter on Sunday.
I don't agree.
Don't agree? What do you mean? There was no scoring.
I don't, you know, I'm a big scoring guy, but I felt like the strategy and the important plays started early. Everything that was happening in the first and second quarter, and I think you and I talked about this, like it felt big that the Patriots were only up 3-0. It felt like something real had been like this. You know, the fact that certain things happened and they didn't get a lead were really impactful. So basically the Rams stayed in the game because of all the little fluky plays that happened in the first quarter. It's the same exact game as the Saints-Rams, which turned out to be a classic. The Rams didn't do anything, but you felt like they were going to come to life. So that's, I kind of felt it interesting. I'm like, well, I was waiting for, basically it was like two boxers circling each other. I was waiting for one of them to throw a heavyweight. So I was sort of, I'm being like a football nerd here, but I thought, and I think you thought too, that some of the strategy was really interesting in the first half of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, I like a good defensive battle. I like it. It was a blinking contest, and no one was blinking for the first couple quarters. I think the most underrated play in the entire game was there was a pass. I guess, let me see. I got the clip right here. The Rams are on the 29-yard line of the Patriots. Goff drops back, steps up in the pocket, and finds Brandon Cooks in the back of the end zone. He's all alone. He shook the coverage. And Jason McCourty, the defensive back, he covered almost 19 yards of ground after the ball was in the air to rip the ball away from an easy touchdown. And the game may go completely differently over that play. If that play happens, you know, with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, we're talking about that almost exclusively. So it's one of those plays where it's going to get lost in the Brady shuffle and the Belichick-Edelman shuffle. But Jason McCourty, now, here's my second theory on this. Jason McCourty, we're not sure if he's Jason or he's Devin McCourty or twins. We're not sure who's who. They both went to Rutgers. I can't tell which one is starting, which one's the backup. So you're like, one of the McCourty brothers made that play. It makes it all too confusing for Jason McCourty.
Right, and also Patrick Chung was out. I'm not sure which safety should have been there. It was a blown coverage. And the funny thing is, too, Goff should have gone there about 10 beats earlier. He missed
right.
it. He was looking at the left. So it was another mistake by Goff. And then when he threw it, he didn't get his legs behind it, and he floated in the air. So it was a perfect scenario. And you might, if you have the clip in front of you, right, Jason McCourty is booking, too. It was an incredible play. I agree with you. That was sort of the play of the day, but I have no, you know, the details are definitely going to go away with history. You're not going to know which McCourty is, exactly as you said. And no one's going to remember that Patrick Chung might have been there in the first place. By the way, that's what I'm saying about this game. The Rams had that game possibly won. There was that touchdown. He almost hit Cooks in the corner of the end zone, too. And people think that Gilmore might have interfered. So it's very possible that the Rams could have won that game.
You know what I think is really interesting, and I don't want to poo-poo Jared Goff's career, but it's going to be interesting to see where it goes from this point on, because you could tell that there's some coaches in this league that prop up good quarterbacks into what we think might be great quarterbacks because of the system that's in place. And Jared Goff has been propped up because of Sean McVay, and maybe vice versa. I'm not sure. It's happening in Chicago. Mitch Trubisky is getting to be a pretty good quarterback, but I'm not sure it's just because the system is so tough to deal with year one in the system. I'm really curious to see Jared Goff next year if he keeps it up, takes a step up, or regresses a little bit. And you're a system guy.
Absolutely. And obviously Sean McVay is a great offensive coach. That's very much a system. I heard something interesting that, you know, he's 3 years in. It's 5 years under the rookie salary cap structure for first rounders. So the Rams may not be sold on him as a long – I don't believe this, but people are like, well, maybe the Rams will go in another direction after these 2 years are up. Somebody said, what do you think of this theory, Paul, that teams are now going to go with young quarterbacks for 5 years, then get rid of them and draft a new quarterback? And you're not going to believe one team is rumored to be doing this. The Seattle Seahawks, some people think, and I don't agree with them at all, that they'll move on from Russell Wilson and go back to the formula that won them the Super Bowl, where they draft a quarterback and spend all their money elsewhere and win with a young quarterback. I don't think that will ever happen, but there was this theory that once Goff gets expensive, they'll get rid of him, start it over with a young quarterback, and spend their money elsewhere. I think it's totally ridiculous, and I'm a system guy, but that is like the new, like, sort of advanced football theory out there. Do you buy it at all?
I do. I'm going to leave you to prove that one, because the quarterback costs for the second contract are so severe. They're either gigantic or you let them go. We talked about this, I think maybe 6 months ago, that there should be a separate slot for the quarterback position on a roster, where what you pay for your quarterback position, let's say you have the two quarterbacks or three quarterbacks on your roster cost this, and it doesn't count against the salary cap. It's like a separate, because they really are separate players, and the rest of your team costs this. And if you could separate church and state with the quarterback, you know, you get like a, let's say you get $30 million a year to spend on the quarterback position any way you want. And you can't have more than that. And the rest of the team, you know, roster is a mishmash of whatever you want to mix it up to be.
Yeah, I love it. I don't think it's going to happen, though, but that's a brilliant idea. Except that it wouldn't kill the parity in the league, because good quarterbacks, the team would have forever, and they could build a great team around them. So if you have Aaron Rodgers, you're going to just build a great team around them. So then you would basically, your standings would reflect your quarterback. I kind of like the chess game where you have to have both. Like, for example, after the Saints won the Super Bowl, their entire roster got gutted because of free agency. Everybody left. So they didn't get back to Super Bowl. And then they got they got a trouble for Bounty Gate. So aren't you worried, though, that like the elite teams will just be unbeatable if you have just you don't count the cap against the quarterback?
Yeah, kind of. I just that's a good point. Yeah, maybe you just put water all over my thing. All right, here's one other thing. I'm kind of not upset, but as a producer, as a media person, I'm kind of bummed that we didn't get the storyline of Tom Brady lost another Super Bowl for the rest of this week, because Tom Brady winning another Super Bowl and playing average, you know, he wasn't great. He definitely wasn't bad. He's just piling on to his legacy, and there's not really anything to do with that. We've already done the Michael Jordan topic. But let's say Brady and the Patriots have, for some reason, lost to the Rams, and Brady now has, you know, almost like a 500 record in the Super Bowl. We would have spent all week deciding, do you want his record, or do you want Montana's? Do you want to be in all those games and lose half of them? It would have been all day, every day, because Brady losing is more interesting than Brady winning, believe it or not.
That is a kind of a snarky take.
Snarky take.
You know, it's very much the producer in you speaking, the content-oriented person. You know, you're right. There's not. I don't want to hear Michael Jordan versus Tom Brady. It's just too different. It really doesn't even make sense as a comparison. You know, if he had lost, I think that losing the Super Bowl thing is ridiculous, because I feel like they're saying, well, if you lose in the divisional round, that doesn't hurt your resume as much as losing in the Super Bowl, when obviously you got farther to get to the Super Bowl. That's completely unfair. I hate when people hold losing the Super Bowl against you. Same thing with LeBron, too. If, say, he had lost, which side of the fence would you have landed on? That, you know, this is dings his reputation a little bit, or that his legacy is intact for making all those Super Bowls?
Look, deep down, the real person in me, the well-thought-out person, says to himself, you want to be in as many Super Bowls as you can, and you try to win them all, so you want the Brady record over Montana. But the cool guy with sunglasses on inside wants to be 4-0 and undefeated in the Super Bowls. When Joe Montana came on the Dan Patrick Show and we discussed the concept of losing a Super Bowl, he goes, I can't really comment on that because I never lost one. The whole place went crazy. And, you know, you want to be able to go scoreboard. And now Joe doesn't have to argue, you know, NFC title games, AFC title games with the Chiefs, because I don't think we remember how many he was in or how many he lost, because we don't do that. We don't have that much capacity in our minds. But Joe has 4-0. He's got the big donut at the end, which is what you want. And so does Mike. Michael has the donut at the end. And Michael has the bonus of the 2 years he took off, or the year and a half he took off. And everyone, all of us, will carry the water saying, you know, Michael chose not to be 8-0. He was 6-0. He chose not to be 8-0, which is even better. They're like, it's so assumed that Michael Jordan would have won 8. It's not really, I can't find a good argument against it.
In my mind, he is 8-0. I don't even assume that he won. I just count him as 8-0. But, you know, if you want to do a second of Jordan versus Brady, the one man in basketball is even more important than one man in football. The quarterback, for example, is dependent on the wide receiver. Now, Jordan was dependent on his teammates to some extent, but he also was a one-man gang at certain times. You can influence the game so much more as one guy. I would always be a Jordan over even the greatest, you know, even quarterback. And also, too, I'm of that era. You know, my age group, just Jordan over everybody. Jordan over, like, the Dalai Lama. Jordan, there's nobody I'm going to ever put over my
team. Dalai Lama had a fantastic team around him. He had a lot of people, a lot of support, a lot more than Jordan in the early years. All right, let's get to Kyler Murray for a second, because it's basically any day now we should find out whether he's going to enter the draft or not. I think it's February 15th. Kyler Murray, the Oklahoma Heisman Trophy winner, has to report to the A's. And if he doesn't, they can claw back his contract, the signing bonus, et cetera, et cetera. If you had to bet right now, not what you want him to do, try to put away what you want as a football fan, what do you think he will do?
Oh, man. I still, you know, I'm going to do what Kyler Murray did on the DP show, just go silent. No, I still lean football. I feel like once you've had that glory of playing quarterback, going to be a minor league baseball player is too much to handle. And, you know, I know he had some trouble with interviews, but he seems like a kid who enjoys the spotlight a little bit. Like, you know, you won the Heisman. I don't think, like, he wilts from the spotlight at all. I think being a quarterback adds to his persona. I just think it's so cool. I don't think he could turn that opportunity down.
You know, after meeting him at the Super Bowl, he's kind of a low-key kid. He's kind of chill and not really lively and, you know, gregarious, not in a negative way, just it's his style. He may be a baseball player. He seemed like the kind of guy who might want to be out there for nine innings, you know, in the field, just you know, pounding his mitt, getting a couple wraps at bat, and then, you know, going back to the hotel and getting a steak and doing that 162 times and making $162 million. I think he's low-key.
He has the glory of winning college football games and, like, elevating a whole stadium to 80,000 people. You know what I mean? There is, like, that high. You can't do that by hitting 284 and then going back and having steak at the hotel. I just don't think you can repeat that in baseball.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, a big rush is irreplaceable.
I agree. But let me ask you this. If he played baseball, let's say he played 2 years in the minors, a full 2 years in the minors, and was just not doing it. He's hitting, like, 211, and it's not there, and it just doesn't look like it's happening. Could he in 2 years declare for the NFL draft, and how much cooler would he be as a draft candidate if he was – is he 21? Let's say he's 23.
Wow. If he's 21, 23 does not sound very old. You make a compelling point right there. But 2 years away from the game is huge for a quarterback. He'd have to start from ground zero. I mean, how many times – can you think of some examples where we've seen this? You know, Chris Wenke was older. Nobody was excited about him. You know, who was the other? Drew Henson got all screwed up because he came back and forth.
Right.
It's not a great model. It doesn't work that much, does it?
No, I would think it'd be the opposite. I really thought that. I still think that there's. I think he's going to play baseball because I think the A's are going to cave and give him a big deal. But if he plays football, he could play football for 2-3 years. And if that doesn't work out, and he's on the bench somewhere, not getting any clock. He could tap out and sign with a baseball team, and he'll be 23, 24 years old. Let's say he's 24. 24 is when Chris Bryant made his debut with the Cubs as a rookie. So, you know, he's going to miss a lot of time, but he can, you know, when football's over, let's say he plays football and he gets done every January, and, you know, he can go to spring training March, all through March. He could do instructional league a little bit and get a little, you know, some reps there, even though he's a quarterback, not a ton, but maybe even 4 or 5 weeks at a time.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. It would be exciting. If you, you know what my vote would be? Do both. Absolutely. Don't even hesitate. Do both. Kind of what you just said, sort of the model you just laid out. Why not try both? You only live once. I think America wants to see Kyler Murray play both sports.
You went YOLO on us, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, a bit of a both. Although, here's a big debate, too. You know, the scouts... I'm thinking the scouts don't like Kyler Murray. They're worried about his size. Now, do you buy into that? Let's hypothetical say he does go into the draft. What's the next 2 months? What's the narrative around that?
I think it's going to be a combination of height. Height's going to be the number one seed. The thing is, you know, we met Kyler Murray at the Super Bowl, and he's probably at the most an inch shorter than Russell Wilson, maybe an inch and a half shorter than Drew Brees. And I'm not even sure that's true, but that's kind of the gist I got. I don't know if that's that much of a difference. I don't think Drew Brees can see over a 6'5 offensive tackle, and I don't think Kyler Murray can either. I think they find lanes and they find things. You know, we did a thing. The average offensive lineman at the University of Oklahoma this past year was 6'4", and the average offensive lineman for the Oakland Raiders was 6'5". Actually, there's 1 inch difference. There's 6'3 to 6'4. So is that enough to totally change how his height factors in?
That's what some scouts are going to say. Here's the thing, too, Paul. He might be 5'9", and Russell Wilson might be 5'11". That's 2 inches.
Right.
Now, I have no idea if that makes – you're right. That's still 6 inches shorter than the lineman, so I don't know what difference it makes. People told me that the lanes are so much wider in college football because the hash marks are so much wider that they're bigger passing lanes when they're smaller ones. But Drew Brees is on it. I'm with you, and I think we spent all draft season talking about how you don't worry about the short quarterback, but he seems really, really short. I don't know. I'm still not fully convinced it's going to work.
All right. By the way, NFL draft, I'm looking at a mock draft. It's our boy, who's this one coming from? Bleacher Report. Matt Miller, our boy Bleacher Report. He just put this mock draft out a couple days ago. He's got Ed Oliver, my guy from Houston, going the fifth pick. He has the New York Giants taking Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback of Ohio State. He has the Jacksonville Jaguars in the seventh spot taking Kyler Murray of Oklahoma with the seventh pick.
Wow. Our buddy Lance Zierlein, by the way, has the Jags taking Haskins at seven, Kyler Murray going four to the Raiders, and Daniel Jones, the Duke quarterback, six to the Giants. I don't know, man. This feels like such a stretch for these quarterbacks who really – Dwayne Haskins was spectacular, you know, during the season, as you said. I don't. It feels like one of those years. I think you said it today on the DP show. One of those years where there are going to be four first round quarterbacks, but you're not going to have four first round talent level
right.
quarterbacks.
Don't sleep on my guy Montez Sweat. He's a defensive end from Mississippi State. What a great name!
By the way, Ed, I've heard Ed Oliver might fall like a stone. I have no idea why. That he's so small that there's talk of moving him back to middle linebacker. That was the buzz. Somebody told me that this weekend that they're worried about how big Ed Oliver is. Because Ed Oliver looks like a beast on the college football field, but how much do you think he weighs? That's a big measurement. He might be a 270-pound guy.
Who cares?
You know, is Aaron Donald like the new model? So
if there's one thing we've learned
excited about the lineman ball.
If there's one thing we've learned, all that measurable stuff should really go out the window. I mean, every year it gets worse and worse. You know, you could play or you can't. Remember a couple of years ago, Christian McCaffrey was too small? Is he still too small? Because I don't think he's any bigger. And Leonard Fournette was the power back of the future. And look at their stats. They just don't match up. This is a league where height and size doesn't matter. Tariq Cohen is too small to play in the NFL for the Bears. He's their MVP.
Yeah. But, I mean, McCaffrey fell all the way to number 8, so it's not like people thought he was that small. By the way, he was pretty tiny in person. But you want a small – we've always said you want a small running back. There's less to hit. You want Sproles. You want Warrick Dunn. You don't want a big running back. Of course you want a short, fast guy.
All right, let's get to Atlanta Super Bowl recapping the week. You know, I'd say it wasn't one of our best efforts eating-wise in down there in Atlanta. Atlanta's a tougher city. It's got these different pockets of neighborhoods. The downtown, I didn't find it had a lot of great food. No offense, but there's a lot of outside areas that does. And a lot of people said, you should go to Buckhead, you should go to Decatur, you should go here and here. There's a lot of you should go to's in Atlanta, and you have to go 15 minutes in a different direction. And if you're a tourist in a city, that's not conducive to, you know, people like the convenience, not to get an Uber or get a cab or drive at night, especially if you're having a couple pops. I didn't have a ton of great meals. I had a really good barbecue at a place called Bees Kraken Barbecue outside of town, about 10 minutes, really good. Anything stand out to you, Perloff?
No, you're exactly. I mean, all the restaurants are Buckhead. We were far away. We were sort of in downtown. So that's the problem with these Super Bowls. This is such. Everyone's probably hating us for this conversation. But you know, basically we were in the place where people go to work. And why are you going to put a nice restaurant when everyone clears out at 5 p.m.? So there were options. I felt it was disappointing. I got to be honest. I did not. There's nothing in Atlanta. They did a fine job, but there was just nothing. Nothing that grabbed my attention about it, except for the stadium looked spectacular. And I heard people talking who were in the stadium. They said the stadium blows away almost every other stadium in the NFL. So is that enough to have justify a Super Bowl having a great stadium? Or if you're the NFL, do you really care about the whole week experience?
I guess you build a stadium, you get one. I think that's just the rule. You build a stadium, you get all that money that goes in the owner's pockets, you get one. No one's even, you know, Detroit got one, Minnesota got one. New York got one. Everyone gets one.
Yeah, it's a simple rule. Now, let's talk real quick about the upcoming ones. Miami next year and Tampa Bay or Arizona. I can't remember. One of those two.
Right.
Then Tampa Bay or Arizona. Then L.A. is in the mix. Any of those stand out, we're going to have a repeat for us for doing a second Super Bowl at DP show.
Yeah, I think Los Angeles could be interesting where they locate it because with the traffic in Los Angeles, if people have to go place to do things, it is going to be a disaster. And that will be quite interesting to see how they logistic that bad boy.
Yeah, I don't think anyone in L.A. is going to notice the Super Bowl is there. It's going to be like New York City. I don't know why. You know, the new stadium is the reason they're doing it, but that's going to be a tough Super Bowl week. I'm not sure. Have you ever done one in Tampa? I did one in Tampa.
Never been to Tampa.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a small city, and it's warm. So it's a perfect Super Bowl city because it's easy to get around. That's why they keep coming back there. You know, Miami, you got Fort Lauderdale one, South Beach, it's all over the place. Tampa is really cool, and I think that's the one where we get to work on our tan.
Let me give you a Julian Edelman topic for you. I think if Julian Edelman could have a really good season next year and – you know, play again in the Super Bowl and, you know, not get another MVP because that's really tough. But you never know. He'd be the odds-on favorite if it wasn't a quarterback. I don't think he's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I think his average regular season stats, mostly because of injury and a slow start to his career, because he played quarterback in college. I mean, he didn't play the position. And the PED hit he took earlier this season probably going to keep him out unless he goes on a really great run. That said, you know, if people are making the case for you to be in the Hall of Fame, that's almost as cool as getting in the Hall of Fame.
You know, I agree with you. You know, he's never made a Pro Bowl, which is a huge factor.
Right.
That's really going to hurt him. I think he might get in. And you know why? Because everyone, you can pull all the numbers you want. It's a narrative award. Like, basically, it's a great story to get in. And just the way when you brought up Calvin Johnson versus Julian Edelman, the way everyone said Julian Edelman, like, he's an important person in these people's minds. The Lynn Swann thing. I mean, this postseason numbers could possibly get him in. I know it sounds crazy. I think that he has a better chance than I think the experts think. And that's nice to hear you say that, because you're a huge Edelman backer. Before the Super Bowl, to your credit, you were saying the one sure bet is over five catches for Edelman.
Yeah.
And I thought the Rams was going to read your tweet and say, we got a double team Edelman. Paulie's saying that he's going to go over. But he's unstoppable. Here's the big downside, that Wes Welker has done it in that spot. Danny Amendola had one season where he did it in that spot. Troy Brown was awesome in that spot. And Deion Branch did it a little bit in that spot. So Tom loves to throw into the slot. Is that going to hurt him a little bit?
It absolutely is. People are going to look at it that way and say, well, if you're playing that Brady offense, you got to catch 80 balls a year and have seven touchdowns. And he didn't even do that. But his story does help. In 2006, 7, and 8, he was at Kent State in the MAC. He was an option quarterback. He passed for 2,000 yards and 13 touchdowns his final year, and he ran for 1,370 yards and 13 touchdowns. If he had done that on a Division I level, he'd be a Heisman candidate. So, again, he's got some work to do, but he went from he wasn't like a guy who dabbled at the quarterback position in college and then became a wide receiver. He was a full-time quarterback. He didn't catch any passes. He was not like a platooner. And, you know, now he's the most – I find him to be the most unstoppable player in sports, or unstoppable player in the NFL for what he does, the seven-yard in pattern, the seven-yard out pattern, which isn't that – it's definitely not exciting, but he's kind of like a – I don't know if Tim Duncan is the right word, but what he does is so mundane and unstoppable.
Yeah. I mean, there are a few routes that Antonio Brown runs that, well, actually used to run. I don't know where he was at, but it's pretty unstoppable. I feel like that's a very strong statement, and I have to look at every other thing that he's done in the NFL, but I totally see what you're saying. You know what to say? I have something about Edelman. Do you know that the Patriots got a tip on him from Dallas Morning News writer Rick Goslin, who's doing his draft thing, which is incredible. And then someone made the argument he's the greatest seventh-round pick in the history of the NFL. And I thought that was interesting because there aren't a lot of Hall of Fame-level players in the seventh round. So you got Brady in the sixth round and Edelman in the seventh round. I mean, what does that say about the Patriots, Sue?
You know, I guess it says, like, we take these guys that we think, you know, he'll be a great football player and we'll find a spot for him.
Yeah.
And you know, we can work on that later.
Exactly. They totally think differently than everybody else. They see a great football player, and they say, you know what, if he sort of grows into himself, grows a beard, maybe dates a supermodel, he will fit right into this offense.
You know, I said earlier on the show, I think the Patriots may grab a wide receiver up high or a tight end, which makes a lot of sense with Gronk out. But, you know, I'm looking at the draft. Nobody had them taking a running back, Sony Michel, out of Georgia. And Sony kind of burst. He kind of burst on the scene. Everyone liked Nick Chubb, and he blew it up at the national title game. And when they took him, we were all like, no way. That was the one pick we didn't see.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. If you do a mock draft, you should just leave a question mark for the Patriots. Because if you think even probably people in the Patriots building don't know what Bill Belichick's going to do. And it's not worth anything, really. But it's supposed to be a deep tight end class, not an elite tight end. So I'm not sure there's a great first-round pick sitting there for the Patriots, but they find guys in the fourth round, receivers. You know, they've had a lot of bad receivers. What about a quarterback at that 32 spot? Do you think that would be possible?
Too early. Why do it? Just get a free agent down the road. Hey, the Leisureman Podcast is brought to you every week by Guinness. Go get some Guinness at your local package store, your local pub. Bring it home. Super Bowl's over, but that doesn't mean you have to stop getting Guinness in you. Get some, bring it home today. Perloff, anything else before we wrap it up?
Yeah, too early. Tom Brady's 64 years old. What do you mean too early? You make it sound like they have a quarterback who's going to be around for the next decade.
So you think like a Daniel Jones slips? He's got a real boring sounding name. Perfect.
Yeah.
You slide in there at the Patriots.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I just think it's a possibility. You dismissed it so out of hand that I was like, now I understand. But like you said, you can't predict the past.
See, the Patriots the Patriots have taken 8 quarterbacks during Tom Brady's run there. But I think it's funny that now that he's truly old, they've stopped taking him.
Yeah, I know, but they don't want to offend him. Overall, I still think it was a fun Super Bowl, Super Bowl week. Anybody, I understand the criticism, but look, I mean, there's so many topics that came out of it. So if you're going to criticize it, don't do it in front of my face because I will argue back.
Yeah, you'll do it definitely behind everybody's back. All right, thanks a lot for listening to the Leisurement Podcast. Download, subscribe, share it with your friends and neighbors. We'll be back next week. We're off to Pebble Beach, Perloff, which means, you know, get a little sunblock for you, even though it's not going to be that warm. Right on the coast, you got to get a little sunblock.
Yeah, I'm putting together my Bing Crosby-like sweaters. It's going to be a great week.
Thanks a lot for listening to Leisurement. We're out.